But now, calling the planning commission meeting for October 28th order at this time. The first item on the agenda is the pledge of allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
She really
did.
In the comments where Mr. Nichols is talking and answering questions, Mr. O'Brien inquired, what is the actual width of the pipe coming in by the water pipe? And it said applicant said 70 to 80 feet. That's an awful wide pipe.
That sounds like you're talking right.
Right of way.
Yes, that's a right of way.
So maybe you could change that to right of way.
Any more comments about the minute? Do we have a motion about the minute?
I move that we accept the minute as written. So one change.
We have a motion by Mrs. Eager to accept the minute with the change of the part of it to the right of way. And I go back and listen to the tape to make sure exactly what was said. Do I have a second? Have a motion by Mrs. Eager, a second by Mr. Johnson. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 4-0.
Mr. Chairman, you might note for the record that Mr. Zimmer's not here and Mr. O'Brien's not here.
I'll be ready to do that thing, actually.
Sorry, just wanted to make sure we're clear on the vote.
Just for record, that 4-0, Mr. Zimmer was not able to attend today. He had to be out of town, and Mr. O'Brien is not here. So that's why the vote is only 4-0. Okay. Our next item is the first of two public hearings. This is SUP 1507, Raymond Gottman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission. This is a special use permit request. SUP 1507 from Mr. Raymond Gottman. And Mr. Gottman is requesting a special use permit to operate an outdoor recreational facility, a small cafe, a small restaurant, it's hundreds of thousands of square feet. With respect to 46 acres, tax map 18, section A, parcel 12. It's located within the rural residential planning area. His own agricultural which necessitates the special use permit request for his activity. If approved, this will be developed in phases. And he is proposing a running track, pavilion, community garden area, and greenhouse. The property is currently wooded, unimproved, certified by private access to all property. Aerial image for the commission. It's the parcel here, delineated black, green stripes. I believe it does have some frontage on 619. Again, the access is off of 53, comes through these two parcels here.
Any questions about the
photograph for the commission. This is looking east along 619. You can see the bulk of the property. Again, it's wooded. Slightly to the northeast. Do you have eight conditions, recommended conditions for this application? Several of those are standard conditions that are customary with all special use permits. The one that I will read and stands out is the hours of operation. The applicant has stated that his hours of operation Monday through Sunday, 6 a.m. to 10:30 p.m. May 1st through September 30th, and 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. October 1st through April 30th. Again, this conclusion is a special use permit request for outdoor recreational facility as defined in our zoning ordinance, and a small restaurant, which is required to be under 2,000 square feet. Hours of operation Monday through Sunday, 6 a.m. to 10:30 p.m. May 1st through September 30th, and 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. October 1st to April 30th. Planning Commission may want to consider impacts such as traffic, extra traffic entering, exiting the property, dust increasing traffic, and visibility of outdoor storage areas, if any. And I will say that in his application, Mr. Gottman has stated that he plans to maintain a 50 to 75 foot buffer around the periphery, as well as build a fence on the northern border, which I believe is adjacent to an agricultural and forestry district. Have a motion on your screen, and I'll be happy to answer any questions if you have any questions.
This entrance on 53, is that 50-foot wide? But I know there's a 50-foot right-of-way there.
Right.
I was just trying to figure out a little bit about that entrance there, because the fact that I believe that we got report and possibly may not be able to comply with the entrance way because of the site distance, which would be 610 feet. But they would have to comply with all VDOT instructions going forward.
Yes, sir. They preliminary, VDOT has asked for an entrance analysis preliminarily for the access to the property off of 53. And they have said that once that is concluded, they will make their evaluations and recommendations about how to proceed with the entrance. But it is a 50-foot access easement or right-of-way. I'm not sure what the actual travelway width is. I would suspect 12 to 14 feet wide gravel travelway. But again, from here, VDOT has requested some form of analysis for that entrance based on the use and the proposed number of trips, and then they will go forward. If this SUP is approved, site development plan is going to be required. At that point, after any further evaluations are done, it's site plan to go to VDOT, and they will fine-tune their comments about the entrance.
You don't know the exact length of the footage off 53 getting to this property, because I noticed it goes right through the middle of parcel 18-3-1. And that part has a regular type of right-of-way, but then when you have the other piece of property, you have a 50-foot right-of-way from Civil War, and that runs exactly against the Ag Forestry District.
Correct. I don't know the exact distance in feet. I don't know if Mr. Godwin knows that. Looking at the scale of the sketch, it looks like it's at least maybe 800 feet.
I have been out on 619 trying to figure out where that access road is there. Really couldn't figure it out. I was back there again today with the rain, and because it says there's an existing road to be used to access the parking area. I saw one little flat area. The possibility that some traffic had been kind of looked like a swampy area. I know that the VDOT couldn't find the entrance in there also. I just was trying to figure out, is that entrance going to be used?
But my understanding is that the applicant won't be using that. It could be used as an alternate in the future, but they would have to go back and amend their plans. And I would, if there's any further to be elaborated on, I would let you copy that.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, can I ask Mr. Chairman a question?
Yes, sir.
I notice on the sketch, it talks about a 50-foot right-of-way that's described in Civil War Book 11, page 14.1. Do you have a copy of that?
I don't.
That appears to me, it appears that the easement was established by Corals rather than by me. I don't know that is any kind of problem, but it would certainly impress me that it would be helpful to know what they said. Because there's certainly all the rules that have particular provisions in them that might relate to.
Because I noticed the first part of the right-of-way is a deeded right-of-way. Up at through 1831. Then once you get to 1813, that's a civil order right away.
I'm just looking at the sketch that,
yeah,
that shows it. I don't know what it means, but
I noticed that this afternoon, and I'm trying to ask that question earlier tonight. And, I had the same question you did. Any other questions, Mr. Togo? Thank you. Would the applicant like to come forward and say anything?
As far as the books, I went through it's all documented as far as the judge goes, and I have pages of where they are. I have pictures on the phone, I don't have them in print, so I can't show them to you per se. But it's all well documented already, and that 50-foot right away from the beginning to the end is there. We did have to go through a little pieces before we actually went and applied for this, and then make sure that, because you can't force an issue. It exists.
Is there any exceptions or
no
conditions? No conditions at all.
There was a civil order that went by the judge. Okay. And I guess someone's going to have to read
it. They're going to answer my question.
Okay.
What's the question?
Thank you.
I want to see what it says.
I understand that, but I was going to tell you it's there. Okay, the plan is there, so okay. As far as the back road, we were just looking for emergency access. It won't be used. I'm not in on using it at all. The tree falls down, it goes right around the other side. That's what it was for. But I can do other things to, it's really not necessary. It was just the point of view, there's an additional layout.
Okay, hold on just 1 second. Just want to let the people here know that when I open the public hearing, you will be able to come forward and speak to any issues that we have raised.
Absolutely.
Anyway, so wanted to let you know that you will be given the opportunity during the public hearing part of this to. Okay. On that, so in other words, you are planning to use the Route 53 as the entrance.
Right.
I do have questions about, because the VDOT talked about that that's probably not the 610-foot site distance that makes it required. I'm talking about what VDOT says. Also, if they require a commercial entrance right now, that piece of property is not yours. You have a 50-foot right-of-way, but if they require a commercial entrance there and it requires more than 50 feet, what would you plan on doing about solving that problem?
I don't know at this point.
So, have you talked to that property owner about if you need to widen that entrance?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
In your application, you have community garden,
yes,
pavilion, shelter, and some other things. One thing that sticks out is a caretaker facility.
Well, when you're there from 6 o'clock in the morning until nighttime, you get muddy, dirty, smelling, getting in and out of the car, sitting in an office, it's raining, getting washed, sit down, if you just have a chair and a desk, and someone's got to kind of be there all the time. You can't leave and go away, say, you're not open Sundays, from Saturday night to Monday morning. I don't think that would be too wise, especially if something goes on early in the morning, there's a number of reasons to do that.
So it would be a permanent type housing?
I don't know about permanent, but it would be accessible. Permanent, I didn't think of that. I don't think I'd really want to live there for pretty, really straight, but, you know, I mean, but to be in and out, and anybody that does anything in dirt, those will get dirty very quickly. And you have to be able to, you know, if you have a headache, you have to sit down, you want to eat something, you know, I mean, you want to, if a thunderstorm comes through and you get swooped away, guess what, just getting out of the clothes is not enough sometimes. You got to get washed up and, you know, be kind of fresh. You know, so, but that's, but my biggest thing is security. You can have equipment there, people, stuff there, you know, you've got gardening stuff there. So you want to know what's going on, you know, and that the people can come around, walk around the gate. So if they get the idea someone's there, they're more likely not to come in.
So would you mind you living on the property?
Well, that was an option that I could, not living on the property permanently, but it would be where you had the access to stay there without any issue. So if I got to change that a little bit, I could change that. But probably there again, the area, I'm looking for maximum amount of hours on the property, not to be there 8 hours. By the time you go home, say go home, I'm filthy, and I go get washed up. Maybe I'm okay, I'm not going back there right now. The hours are going to be from morning to dusk, not the hours we've established, from 6 to 10:30. Once it's dark out, that's it. It's over. You know, there's no more. I don't plan it. I just did that so I don't have to come back here and go for another hearing. Say you get a summary event coming up.
Mainly, I want to know the yes or no answer. Is somebody going to be living there?
I want to have somebody there.
I need to know from the planning department.
Yeah.
If somebody's going to be living there, does their additional stuff need to be put in the SUP or something of that nature? So,
okay, I see. I'm sorry.
I had another question. There's supposed to be a possibility of a small restaurant.
Yes.
What would that be consisting of, and how it has to be less than 2,000 square feet according to what you're applying under.
Yes.
Could you tell us a little bit about that? I'm just, you know, wondering about this because of the fact that it's so far off of the road.
Sure.
And the other types of things going on.
I was just gonna, it was, if you're there a couple of hours, say you want a cup of coffee, or a donut, or a muffin, as simple as that. You know, nothing sit down, formal, nothing like that. But to, you know, have some, lemonade, whatever, you know, so there's, you're garnishing, you're giving something where, oh, I'm gonna, I have to go get some drink. You gotta leave, you go get something to drink, or you gotta bring with you. You know, so that kind of thing, where you can sit down, it's very hot out, or it's very cold out, a thunderstorm came through, I feel like having a cup of coffee, I'm phenomenal for that. Oh, time for a cup of coffee, let's go. You know?
Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Tugler, my question about the residence part.
No, sir.
Mr. Stewart and I were just discussing that, is to our knowledge, A1 zoning, single family dwelling would have to be accessory dwelling units are allowed, but only if there's a primary dwelling. So I don't know any other mechanism in our ordinance that would allow a dwelling on that property without a primary dwelling.
I think really got two possible questions about so-called dwelling, it's called some sort of habitation. Living quarters, living quarters. One is, let's assume you have living quarters and it's whoever might be, the owner or the tenant or employee or whatever. Is there anything you need to do to accommodate that? The second question is, do you need somebody on the site to provide security for purposes of determining the appropriateness of its use? So if you had the applicant just told you that having somebody on the property adds security, which it clearly does that make a difference to you in terms of whether this use is appropriate? if you think it needs somebody to be there in order to make it secure, then you have to put a condition up to that effect. If you think it's not appropriate to have somebody at all, then you need a condition the other way. Otherwise, it would simply be optional. And you do it or don't do it, and I think Doug was right, I think it's going to be either going to be an ordinary single family dwelling or some sort of accessory use to the other facility. And what I'm thinking is where you have, for want of a better term, maybe a night watcher. You're going to be a full-time sort of resident manager type. That's really a specialized kind of dwelling where he's there as part of his job responsibilities. Not that he's there because he likes the apartment. And I think that's the kind of thing you might want to consider. Apparently, I do have some problems with this road issue. I have two kinds of problems with this road issue. One of them is what these documents say, because the law is that you can have restricted uses for an easement. And typically, you have that in case of things like restricted uses and things, which is suggested that something like that is the case with this easement order. The second question I have is that there is a Supreme Court case that says that a road accessing one property over another property is not accessory to the underlying property. In other words, now, this road wouldn't be an accessory use to parcel 1831 or 1813. It's accessory to this special use permit use only when it gets on this property. So the question is, does this road require the same kind of, does it require a special use permit to be used in connection with this use, which requires a special use permit? Now, the case doesn't really speak to that issue because in that case, and I haven't known a lot about it, this is my case, it was in Orange County and there were two different zoning districts, the back parcel and the front parcel. And the activity that was for which a special permit was granted in the back parcel was not permitted on the front parcel. And the Supreme Court said you can't use the road that goes across the front parcel to serve the back parcel because it's not a permitted use in itself. It's not accessory to the other use because the other use is not on the same property. So I'd be pretty concerned about that. Obviously, the site distance question is another question. This road, I think, presents an awkward set of properties. But I think I'd be concerned that you don't have enough information about it unless you're satisfied that those questions really don't matter. It may be that they don't matter because either they get this problem solved or can't use the use. But I think you should consider those aspects of your own problem. The other thing about this existing road, more or less parallel to Burton Lake Road, I don't think this drawing is precise enough to say, but I'm not sure you can tell that this property has any actual frontage on Burton Lake Road that can allow an entrance. So I'm not sure that road is usable by this property as an access.
Well, one of the questions I had back to the right-of-way is whether right-of-way to a residential type of property, but would it be a right-of-way if you were going to a business property? I just wonder, because you got the right-of-way on the one piece of property that refers to D 42-54, and the other one is the civil war. So that was one of the things I was looking at again this afternoon to discover that question also.
When you have a right of way, it's created by portal, it has to be created. And one of the, as a young lawyer reminded me today, there are four ways you can create an easement. And one of them involves four things. And those are the uses that are particularly sensitive to the facts. Facts give rise to the order. And just for example, you've all heard of prescriptive use, which means, don't nail that mission, it's been used for a long time. And that can be limited in terms of character of use by what's actually happened in the past. So that if you had a prescriptive use that was, for example, you do see this, only for residential, then the question is it permitted for agriculture or commercial? And I can't answer that question because I haven't seen the order that I know what the case is about. It's also possible that the deed, if there's a deed, it can be restricted as well. And I can't answer that because I haven't seen that either. But those are things that could be answered by examining these documents. The other question is a more subtle question because it's a question of pure zoning law. And I think that's maybe if you approved this and somebody chose to challenge it, they could challenge it on the basis of that case and could stop this. So I think it's certainly you know the answer to that question.
I think what I would do is open the public hearing and then we'll have a discussion. What we're doing now is we're going to be opening public hearings. Anyone that wants to come forward to speak on this issue, come forward to the microphone, state your name and address, and you're limited to 3 minutes.
Notation at the very bottom from my lawyer that you're being booked So now, and they showed it to them, they didn't repair it. And when we have heavy rains, it just washes out the front part of that right away. But there is stipulations on that second right away.
Thank you. Anyone else wishing to come forward?
Hello, my name's David Wood. I'm the, 3383 Thomas Jefferson Parkway. I own the tax map 29-5 parcel, which is deemed the so-called access road for 619. There is no access point. My property on center line to what was deemed at one time an old road, in which Wooten Lake Road itself, 619, which links. That road does not exist. Nature had reclaimed it vigorously. My property line runs to the bridge itself, and it is marked. The land to access parcel 1812 in Concern will be on the west side, which there is road frontage, but the bridge would have to be put in place to cross the North Fork. That is all that I have.
Thank you
for listening.
Thank you. Anyone else wishing to come forward?
My name is Thomas Brooks. I live at 4789 Woodland Road, Brookside, the creek. Very little. It's only an acre. It's probably got 100 foot of road frontage. It's all swamp. And all my land right there is all swamp, too. Something where the house is.
You're right there on 619.
Right beside
the small house that's right there.
The brick house.
Right there before.
Yes. I've been there all my life. My dad sold Dick Gary that corner of land for lifetime rights. Dick Gary couldn't do no looking. He stole perfect swamp. Every time we get like tonight, the creek is about to flood that field. It's constantly does that.
Thank you. Anyone else wishing to come forward this time? Seeing no one else wishing to come forward, we will end the public hearing for this time and go to discussion among the planning commission. I myself have some opened up a lot of questions tonight. I think that there needs to be further investigation about how these right-of-way are worded. I think we need to know answers about how an entrance could be put in, although that may really have to do with site plan, but I think we need to know whether it could be actually put in a commercial entrance there. We need to know about what type of facilities for a caretaker or whatever.
I suggest that you defer to November 8th to me, then the applicant can has a deadline, that way you wouldn't have to re-advertise it.
Yep, same thing, I'll go along with that.
That's gonna be the 16th because of. Do I have a second on that motion?
I'll second that.
Okay, I have a motion to defer with certain conditions to the November 16th meeting by Mr. Johnson. I have a second by Mr. Gaines. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 4-0. All in attendance. Thank you. The next item on our agenda tonight is SUP 1509, Round Top Limited Partnership.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the commission. This is special use permit request 1509. They're requesting an amendment to their existing special use permit for their educational facility. And existing SUP 1404. And they're trying to do is acquire the adjoining tenant space, which would increase their number of enrolled students based on the occupancy for fire and safety, excuse me, building code from the combined units. I believe it's number 6 and number 7 Central Court. And it would take the occupancy up to 124 people. So that is a special use permit request. They're amending their existing special use permit for the educational facility to 75 occupants in number 6 Central Court and 49 occupants in number 7 Central Court for a total of 124. And they're requesting to amend their number of enrolled students during the calendar year from 50 to 116. That would leave 8 persons as allowed by fire safety as a cushion for staff and whomever else may be in there above and beyond the students themselves. It is Zone B1, which requires a special use permit for educational facility, and this was successfully approved last year. This is the zoning map, pink, identifies the commercial zone areas that is within the shopping center there next to the Dogwood restaurant. Aerial photograph is this building here, and this wing of the building. Few photographs, you see their sign there on the building. Main entrance. These are the suggested conditions. Staff did see fit to add one. Pursuant to the building code, we added one condition, a fifth condition, and that's so that they would comply with the current building code is security and required permits from the county. Hours of operation are changing. They're simply increasing the square footage of the building, and they're trying to comply with building code, the number of occupants, and increasing the number of enrolled students from 50 to 16 based on that extra square footage. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions as far as also here this evening.
This extra space is what is now Angel Dance Studio.
I believe that's correct. It's an adjacent space.
I think Angela Houston created that. Okay. And I've been down there again last night and stuff like that. And since it's been there, I haven't had any comments about something like that. I don't see any. I go there at least once a week and don't see any activity that I was earlier today. I asked you some questions about the difference between 116 and 124. That extra 8 is for administration and teachers. The 116 would be the amount of students, and that 124 complies with building code.
Correct. Yes, sir. And it's just like if you go any building has an occupancy rate as prescribed by building code. This is no different. They're just combining two adjoining spaces and they, that number is the number that the safely accommodate 124 as well.
Anybody else have any questions for the applicant?
No, I have a question for the applicant.
Okay, we'll let the applicant come forward if you have any questions. Before we ask questions, is there anything like you would like to tell us about this or anything? There is the leader has questions, so anybody want to talk to that? Or do you want to just tell us about it?
Sure. Well, we grew far faster than we thought we would and had anticipated. We have tried to be good neighbors, so Dogwood provides our hot punches. We are in the process of setting up eye exams or what is it, screenings with the eye doctor facility, Angel Dance Studio. She's now moved across the street, provides a class for our students once a week. And we try to make sure if we have any evening activities, it's not on Thursday, which is bingo night. And I think so far things are going really well. But now that we're looking at occupancy issues, because you know we are more like doubled, we are looking to increase the enrollment limit. Now I will clarify too that for the 75 occupants, we have to, for fire code, we have to put in a cold station fire alarm system, which we are willing to do. And we have looked into that. We don't want to spend the money until we get approval that we can move forward to do that. But that would increase right now from 49 to 75 in building one, or 600 court. 7 court there, because there's only one restroom, and you cannot increase the occupancy of that. So we're going to the fire cold station.
My question was, I think you've already answered it. One of the conditions was school hours was 8 to 4. You're allowed to put 48 permission to use the
meeting. Yeah, I saw that on an application. I mean, I didn't put that. That was in our original one, and then it was amended that we could use it as a small school. So, we do have an after school program this year, which runs till 6. So that would be something to at least clarify that, you know, staff starts arriving at 7:30. Our normal day is from 8:15 until 3 o'clock. Then we have an after school program until 6 o'clock. There are a few classes. The chiropractor's office in our shopping center uses our facility once a night, actually his wife, to do an informational class. That we're offering art classes and some enrichment classes at night, very small groups, but you know, trying to become a community enrichment, maybe some financial planning classes for budgeting and things like that. So yeah, it does.
Should
we change that condition? Our revised special use permit, the one that we had, does not say use of 4, it did say extended hours later.
Do we need to amend that?
Mr. Rivera, and so the hours of operation, they're not changing, so it goes without saying that they remain as they were approved by the board last year.
Well, I think what I hear Ms. Zeger saying is my concern is more, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I think the question is there's an ambiguity, and it's an ambiguity.
Right, I think the planning commission made a recommendation for board changes that they need more hours to do something with the original. So that may be where we got the 8 to 4, and I'm pretty sure the board is on.
That sounds familiar to me. What I recall was the point that there are meetings and plays and things like that. It's pretty much ordinary for that level of school, and the board didn't want to give it that.
Right.
I think if you adopt these conditions, you are going to get
it. That's what I'm
saying. So, change it to the board approved? Or
if we do what's more approved, yes, we could.
Yeah, it wasn't our intention to change anything that was already approved. thing we wanted to do is amend the occupancy. So I don't know where that came from, because that was, I mean, that wasn't what the final approval was. The final approval was that we could use it for evening days. So again, please change that, because we like what we have right now.
So we don't remember exactly what the board approved in the calendar.
I think the better way to do that is, what I understand you're saying is that, and I, again, I don't have much feeling about this one way or the other, but I think you're right, that if the intent is to change one condition and only one condition, then the others should remain as approved by the board. If that's what you intend. And what I hear is that the conditions listed in the staff report are not the same as what the board approved.
Okay.
I guess one way to do this is
the regular school hours. It says regular school hours. Does that other part?
What I was
going to be not regular.
What I was going to suggest, in lieu of having deferred the matter, if you're inclined to approve it, is approve the amendment of condition number one.
The board supervisors here approved it with three conditions. I believe they left out, I would have wanted to approve it.
Yeah.
Maximum number of students on site, 50, limit to 50. The board or the representative of the right to inspect the business for compliance with any conditions at any time. And the board reserves the right to revoke the special use permit. Those are the three conditions that were approved. I believe there was a discussion.
So if we decided to leave out condition number two.
Well, what I would suggest is just not mention anything for condition number one and approve an amendment to the permit.
Because I'm looking at things that are good. Condition number one is about the 116
right.
Students. Number two is about the hour.
Right. What I'm saying is that I think that it appears that that was wrong.
Right.
And what I'm suggesting is that I think I hear the applicant saying the only thing she wants changed is to raise the number of students permitted. That's condition number one. What I would suggest is you recommend, and assuming you only want to approve it, that you recommend amending the permit previously granted to raise the maximum number of students enrolled to 116.
And then just
don't address them. Whatever they were, that's what they were meant.
Okay. Does anybody else have any other questions of the applicant? Thank you. At this time, we'll be opening the public hearing. Anyone wishing to come forward to speak to this issue, please come forward at this time. State your name and address. Seeing no one coming forward, we'll turn over to the Planning Commission for discussion. Unless there's any questions from anyone else, I don't have any questions. The leader wants to make a motion, so we have a motion from the team. Planning Commission, but I understand that he had to go out.
out the paper copies of what Ms. Goodwill sent in last week, just for reference. We added this to the agenda just to solicit any additional comments you may have when we relay it to the agencies. In lieu of, or in advance of the November 16th discussion. Before we determine the advertised proposal hearing in December.
Only thing added to this was the intake for the Jacksonville Water System.
Is that the only thing added?
Yes.
No, members of the commission, the only two items that were added from the recommendation for the commission members last time was to add the intake, which is actually an additional portion of the intake. Because if you look to your left, I'm not sure if you have a big spreadsheet in front of you. The Board of Supervisors in the previous, I think it was for FY15, originally approved $2.75 million for the JRWA intake, and then to come to a little more, I guess, close realistic numbers for the county's portion of that intake, we added $2.25 to bring the total of the JRWA intake to $5 million. Like I said, the Board approved the $2.75 as a CIP project, and it was approved as borrowing, but obviously no borrowing or anything has occurred, and that's a whole separate issue right there once it comes to that. Regarding the Zion's Crossroad, $6 million was added to that piece, and actually, and I think I spoke out of turn, both the $2.25 million and the $6 million were added to the fund from the fund balance section on the CIP. And previously, in two separate fiscal years before, the Board approved $575,000 in fiscal year 14 for the Zion's Crossroad project, and then in fiscal year 15, they approved roughly right around $4.1 million, and that was approved as borrowing, but obviously no borrowing has occurred or taken place on that yet. But the $575,000 the initial was funded. But those were the only two items that were added for the commission recommendation, and probably good that they were.
Well, I see $6 million down here for that.
It is $6 million is the additional piece for the Zion's project, but previously funding was a total of $4.65 million, and then for the JRWA, it's $2.25 million on here, but previous funding. Or previous approval was $2.75 million.
So the $4 million previous was for the corrections facility?
Well, the whole thing is that's all the Zion's Crossroad project. That's all the corrections 250-15 project.
Okay, no water from James.
No, the Zion's Crossroad piece, that is the corrections, pipes, tanks, everything. That's
total cost.
That's per the preliminary engineering report that RK&K provided in March 2015 that they presented to the Board. They had estimated $7 to $8 million at that point.
And we're projecting all of this in 2017.
The $6 million? Well, I mean, if you, depending upon what the
$8,250,000 total.
Correct. And like I said, it depends upon what the Board decides to do at that point. If it's a borrowing issue, you're not necessarily going to borrow a little bit one fiscal year and a little bit in the next fiscal year. You're going to do it all at once. But those additional numbers that are in this fiscal year 17 capital budget, combined with the amounts that were approved before, those are the lump sum ballpark totals of everything. You know, until we go out and go out for bid for construction and all that, if we get to that phase from the Board deciding to go that route, then, you know, then we'll get more fine-tuned figures.
Okay, now, would you consider this project the
Would I?
Yes.
I don't think I could answer if that's the most important or not, from the county standpoint. And I know it's listed as a number one on here.
What's our total? What's our total that's in?
It's roughly around $95 million.
This could put us over the hour mark there. There are 105.
This, well, I mean, like I said, what we have in here right now, the 6 million, the 2.25 is in the fund balance column. So, depending upon what the board decides to do, whether they cash fund it or they take out debt issuance for it, that's.
So there's not in the board column.
Okay, so the fund balance, would you have the money?
The funds are there if the board decided to use the funds for that, correct?
We have to keep, what, 12% of total budget?
12% of governmental revenues.
So that would not reduce it below the 12%?
No, there's the board, set cash aside for the radio project. The E911 radio project, two previous fiscal years. And in June, instead of using the cash for that, they lease financed the radio project.
So when is this due to our recommendation to the board?
The budget calendar calls for the plaintiffs to have a public hearing in December, right?
December, okay.
Make a recommendation to the board.
And then we'll get it into the open January.
Correct.
Yes, I mean, like I said, this is whatever the planning commission recommends, this document and the funding that goes with it will go from the county administrator's budget and whatever he proposes to the board at that first meeting.
But you've been April before they approve the TIP.
Well, the whole budget, including the capital improvement budget, would be approved with the budget in the second meeting of April.
When the 911 radio projects that decided to lease purchase that, was that money earmarked just for that, or are they able to just pull it and use it for water?
The board could decide. They could use it for whatever they would like.
So basically they're just a couple of those public probably the sheriff's
trial. Well, I mean, like I said, the project was leased. The E911 project was it was leased instead of using cash for it. So whatever the board chooses to do with that $7 million, whether they want to earmark it for another project, pay off debt, do whatever, that's entirely up to
them. So they just put that money in the fund balance?
Correct. Right now it's just sitting there.
Okay. You did good. Just a little bit of discussion, and my feelings about the computer instructional technology and infrastructure replacement, and I think that something needed. I think that most people in the county would think it's something needed, but I'm one of these people that like to follow rules, and that particular thing does not follow the rules of the CIP as it is in our comprehensive plan. We had suggested last year, and I think the board concurred, that it should go in the regular budget of the school system. I have talked to Mr. Weaver a little bit about this, and I'm planning on talking to Mr. Rittenhouse about it. I can't understand why they don't want to put this in the school budget. I have an idea why, but I hope I'm wrong.
I don't think it can be in the CIP. I think it has to be in the instructional.
prohibit them from bringing it back to the CRT again. But does that change in terms of where we can vote this thing back in? I think if it needs to go in their regular budget, or should that be just the first part of what we do when we get it? We see what it can achieve in their regular budget for the school. Let's just make a vote at that point and then continue with our conversation.
Nobody's ever given me a satisfactory answer to why they don't want to put it in the school budget. Like I said, I plan on talking to Mr. Rittenhouse, who is on the school board, to ask him if he can get us an answer.
He may or may not have any answers, since we have our representative from the school system here.
And he is actually the budget person, right?
Yeah, the budget. So if we have the budget person from the school system here, it would be a satisfactory answer.
But the school board has to vote on the budget itself. Now, you know, I have in my mind why I think they don't want to do it, but
I think we discussed that last year.
And I'm not going to say why, but I hope I'm wrong.
You know what, I hope you're incorrect also. However.
But I've also researched it a little bit. Some places do it in the CIP. Some places do it in the regular budget. The only thing that I say is I read what the comprehensive plan said at the last meeting, and it does not comply because they're asking for the same amount every single year for 5 years.
And they indicated that it will continue on past the 5 years that we have listed.
So. Well, we've only did an analysis over the last 10 years of where our budget has, how it's gone up and where, and the school's overall budget, operating budget, has gone down 30%. Our debt service has gone up 435%. Our general government administration was up 132%. And the only thing that was lower than the schools was health and human services and social services. So, you know, I think it behooves the county to put this where it belongs, because it just doesn't seem fair for us to hide the school operating budget in the CIP, and it makes us look like we're spending only 30% over 10 years, 3% per year, when everything else has gone up 100% or more. The CIP, I think, was up 178%.
What I'm saying here is the CFP is a 5-year plan that tries to anticipate all new or replaceable capital needs. A capital project is defined as a generally non-reoccurring asset, both tangible and it tries to build this vehicle, land, etc., and intangible software, easement, license, studies, services, etc. That's over $20,000, which we need to raise that, but anyway, that's another thing. But, you know, it says non-reoccurring, and that's my biggest
computers are taking place of
instructional material.
Yeah, papers, pencil, books.
Yeah.
And I
think none of us have any objection to this at all. We just think that it needs to be in the regular school budget because of the nature of it and the reoccurring of it. So, of course, I don't have any problem with a lot of these projects. The only other thing I myself have a problem of recommending this new administration building, although it might be cost effective looking at the repairs and so forth, like that they were talking about school board building, and then 5 years down the road, we're talking about possibly tearing it down. That didn't make sense to me. So I think that the board really needs input on that. I just don't like, I don't feel comfortable recommending that one way or the other. I know we need that countywide building assessments. I agree with that very, very strongly.
That's a beautiful building. I mean, I think if you had been anywhere the treasurer's office is, what you're looking at, too, I would have been there.
Yeah, well, treasurer's office needs that, a lot of that is electrical and so forth like that because of the, that wiring in that building is so far outdated that it could be a safety issue.
I'd like to see what it costs to repair it. Another thing I found was the $200,000 fuel tanks. I spoke with two different oilmen, and an oil company put those in for free. They signed a contract with them. These are big tanks. And I think they needed two, is that right? Two tanks? Well, one for gas and one for diesel?
I believe so. I have to know.
Yeah, and I'd like to know the size of the tanks and the
Now, that's something that's out in 2019, so that's something they could probably investigate into. Now, debate more about it if there are problems with leakage and stuff like that, you know, no doubt. Now, it's removable and stuff like that. Is the fuel company that would put them in free?
But they're responsible. The EPA, they're responsible for the insurance for them.
But doesn't that go against the RFP? I mean, don't you have to give other vendors at least an opportunity to bid on that?
Well, that would be a problem there. I mean, that's...
It wouldn't be a problem because you could have all of the companies come in, and whatever the contract was, you take the lowest contract.
And I know for a fact, too, also, if it's a leakage problem or something like that, each month we pay a certain amount into a state fund to help with the replacement cost. Because I had to have my oil tank replaced, and when they told me about it, the guy that was... environmentalist there and did all kinds of stuff. Actually, had to check my well and everything else. That's out of 2019. We might put a recommendation that they look into that.
They might get it quicker.
Yeah.
That's my guess.
Would that be something that we could do and see if we recommend that they look into something like that? I mean, it makes sense to me. Anything else that I did have one other question. Fire rescue personnel protective equipment replacement. Does $140,000 sitting in a fund for that? Is this $7,150 additional?
The $140,000, $70,000 was funded in fiscal year, I remember it was 14 and 15 or 15 and 16. There are $70,000 in each one of those years. And then there's another $70,000 to complete the fire rescue's need for replacing all the personal protective equipment.
Okay, but we're showing more in 17, 18, 19.
For the personal protective equipment?
Personal protective
equipment. No, there's the 71,750. That's the end of it.
Hard to see that line.
okay, I went one line down. I usually put a piece of paper across here when I look at it. Okay, my fault. Okay, that is additional 71,750 other than what's already in that 140.
It's already, but that 140 has already been funded, already been utilized. I think all four of the fire's companies, I don't remember how many suits they each purchased, but I think it was like 15 or something like that.
But they need another 71,750.
Correct.
Okay. We need any more discussion on this? I know we're going to talk about it more on our November meeting, right?
Correct.
And we're going to try to rank it at that time.
And a work session?
We're not having a work session because of the fact that our meeting is going to be on the 16th. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Because of Thanksgiving.
It's going to be on a regular agenda.
Now, we also, in December, are we having a work session in December? I can't remember when the date of that, I know that was changed also.
Well,
I remember.
Yeah, right now, if it is needed, we'll schedule one. Do we even have any applications for this in for
We may have, one.
We may have one application.
We may have at least done.
I thought that was good. No vote?
That's a good one.
Well, I'm interested.
We deferred that to no vote. Okay. Any other discussion about CIP? Okay. We got some new business discussion about advertising the proposal to Valley County zoning and subdivision ordinance updates. I think it's going through. Payne has tried to make us comply with the new rules according to the state of the code.
There's really three kinds of changes here. This is something that, frankly, we've gotten behind on. We should have been doing this a relatively small amount of time, and we haven't. We should have let it slide for a while. We're catching up. There are three kinds of amendments here, by and large. One is where there are statutory citations that have changed. So some of these things, and I noticed this in the subdivision ordinance in particular, they go as far back as referencing statutes in Title 15.1, which was repealed some time ago. Most of the statutes are pretty similar, but they've been renumbered. So a lot of these are just renumbered and things like that. The second kind of provision is ones that the grammar or the some of the coding, some of the expressions are really in need of some tweaking. None of that substantive. It's not intended to change anything in permitted uses or anything like that. The third is provisions that change as a result of the law. And the first set of those are ones that relate to the enabling legislation. I noticed, just in glancing through this again tonight, that one of the principal things that has been changed in that category is with regard to Board of Zoning Appeals. The Board of Zoning Appeals statute, in my opinion, has always been kind of awkward. It's hard to read. It doesn't flow together well. I think the General Assembly has made some positive changes in that regard. It's made it easier to understand. And it's made some changes that I think make things more logical. You don't have a choice about that. You have to follow those rules. I guess it's a good thing. I think it's a good idea because you cannot do them anyway. But we have to update those. Now, the final category is that there are a couple of changes, and most obviously with the sign regulations. that have to be changed in ways that are not immediately obvious. So, for example, in the board zoning appeals cases, it will say variance means so and so, whereas it said variance means such and such before. It tells you exactly what you say. The category I'm talking about now are things that the law has changed, particularly with respect to court cases, and one case in particular. Ms. Eager and I were talking about this in way over, but it's a United States Supreme Court case that deals with signs. And if you've ever heard the expression, hard cases make bad law, that's this case, because this dealt with a town ordinance in New Mexico or something like that. And it was really obviously designed to restrict one particular use. It was a church. And it was designed to basically stop this church. And I don't know why it made it look. And it was pretty egregious. And it was sort of assassination dressed up as something else. The problem with it is Justice Thomas wrote the opinion, and it's not a good opinion, in my opinion. It's not well written, because if you take it at face value, he wipes out about 100 years worth of established constitutional law with respect to zoning and other regulation of that kind. I don't think he intended that. But frankly, I think he was so mad about it that he didn't get these people out of here. I mean, you can't agree with Justice Thomas, but that's kind of what it looks like. One of the other justices wrote, I think it was a concurring opinion, that said the court's opinion will now invalidate every sign ordinance in the United States. And that's probably a little bit overstated. Well, it's overstated. But everyone is subject to challenge that wouldn't have been before this case. Now, with all that said, we have two ways to deal with it. One is we argue that our ordinance is okay, even under Justice Thomas's analysis, which I think we might be able to get by with, but it's we'd be running a risk. The other thing is to change it so that it addresses the issues with which he had problems. It's going to make some significant changes in the way the things are expressed. The one issue that we really had a problem with was political signs. And what you'll see when you get into this is we have eliminated political signs as a separate category. And the reason we have is because Justice Thomas characterized anything that is based on what it says as not being content neutral. That's a term of art. And if it's not content neutral, then in order to pass constitutional muster, the county has to show a compelling need for that change that couldn't be done in a more general way. I don't think for a second he really intended that, but that is what he said. I don't think it's really that big a deal. What you do is you say, and I think what we've been doing is we took all the signs, the auctions, yard sales, and political events, and plays, things like that, and grouped them together as temporary signs, and put restrictions on that way, so that can't be for a church, a political gathering, a political candidate, a yard sale, an auction, all those things are treated the same. So it doesn't matter what you're advertising, it's the way you're advertising. There are other ways to solve that particular problem, but it is a big problem in terms of potential challenges to it. And it takes up a lot of text. All you're doing tonight is initiating the process. We'll get to discuss these things in detail. As a practical matter, I'm telling you about 90% of them, you can discuss it all you want, but you don't really have much choice. some of it you do have some choice, and there are other ways to do it.
Other word, which is definitely go, political signs would be just lumped in to the category of temporary signs where they can't go up.
All temporary signs.
Like 30 days beforehand, 10 days afterwards, or something.
That's right. All temporary signs are considered the same way. Now, the difference is that the time limit is 30 days before the event and 10 days after. So if you have something that's ongoing, and it starts on September 1st, you put it up on August 2nd, whatever it comes down to, and it goes till September 30th, you take it down October 10th. If you have an election for Mrs. Eager, it couldn't go up before October the 4th, and we have to come down by November the 13th.
I'm not going to speak for you. I'll jump in on this. That seems like a very short time period for having the signs up, because...
That's not casting concrete. You can check that.
All right. Sounds good. That's all I need.
Well, but I would caution you to think about one thing. And this is the dilemma that we struggle with. You think hard to... A political sign is different from the artist.
It is very different.
But the problem is, what we did before was we based our ordinance on a decision of the Fourth Circuit. And it dealt specifically with political signs. That's why we characterized it the way we did and had it in a separate category. The problem is that the Supreme Court has now said, if you do that, that's you're regulating the content of the speech. In other words, it would be like, you know, you said, vote for Joe Smith, and you regulated it and said, you can't say regulate it for, you can't say vote for anybody whose name has five letters in it, anybody whose name is Smith. I'm making this intentionally.
No, I get exactly what you're saying.
But that's the problem we're struggling with. Right. So if you're concerned about our existing ordinance actually makes political signs more liberal than other signs like that. Mm-hmm. The problem with that is if you do that, then they're not, if you make that distinction, then they're not content neutral. And the county would bear the burden of proving why you had to have that particular set of regulations.
So you're not making one set of temporary signs equal with the political signs, and that would create a rental problem.
Right. What this is obviously intended to do is to say you can put up a sign for a Catholic church, but you can't put up a sign for a Baptist church. That's what real content neutral means for me. Vote for the socialist. He's better than the Republicans. You can't say that. You can't regulate that. Somebody can say that, and you can't tell them you can't do that. If you say no sign shall endorse a particular party, that's regulating content.
Now, wasn't that also?
The worst thing I've seen is the fact of not taking the signs down after the event.
That's a problem.
That's a problem. And I, just with a 30-day time period of getting signage puts an undue burden on small campaigns. And I'm thinking about small campaigns, you know, because they have the hardest time trying to get locations for signs.
Yeah, it's a practical matter. Yard signs are only going to happen really with small level elections. You're not worried about, you know, Donald Trump yard signs. I'm sure they exist, but
I guess.
But he ended up playing money for TV and things like
so
that.
Yeah.
Joe Blow, that's running for, you know, Soil Conservation District, can't afford TV. Or he doesn't live on his TV.
Right.
You were saying that, I agree with you. But We're not trying to limit anybody. We're trying to put a balance on exactly the problems that you, that Mr. Chairman, you and Mr. Gaines are identifying, that when you put up a sign that says vote for Gaines for supervisor, that was a surprise, Mr. Gaines, I'm sure.
Yeah.
when you say that, if Mr. Gaines wins, then that sign wouldn't have any value. Because
it doesn't have value if I lose. That's very valuable.
If it doesn't have any value, and if you win, because if you lose, then I can't go vote for you. If you win, I already have one. So if, the problem is, if you have an election sign on, for election on November 3rd, on November 4th, it's obsolete.
Yeah.
It's trash. And on the other hand, if, it's kind of funny to say this when we're talking about elections that are more than a year old and are already spending millions of dollars on it, but the problem is, if you put up, again, these, particularly the local election, when you put these signs up, if you put up a sign, you know, eager for Levanna County, if you put it up 6 months in advance, the chances are it'll be torn up by the time the election comes in.
Yeah.
And nobody will know who you're talking about because it doesn't use
it. Although in North Carolina, sometimes I see signs up for some of the races in June that are no longer.
We do, and that's the kind of thing Mr. Gaines, I think, is identifying the problem. You have to balance those time periods. And it's a lot easier if you can choose the different, you know, a yard sale. There is absolutely no point to advertise a yard sale more than a week or so in advance.
No.
But, so, it would really be nice if you could say, you know, 10 days before and 2 days after for a yard sale, 60 days before and 10 days after for a political sign. But we think if you do that, you're inviting challenges. So I'm not saying those numbers are necessarily cast in concrete,
right.
But that's the context in which you need to consider this. I'll bring this to Vivian and her, and then she wrote it. It's my sister. She's much more pleasant than I am.
So in other words, we need to make a motion to advertise this for a public hearing to bring it to us.
That's correct.
16th of November.
That's correct.
And it's in our package now, and I noticed the things that you marked out and the changes and so forth like that, and like the repeal of the political part.
Yeah, again, if there's language that's amended, it's the usual way. If it's being repealed, it's struck through, it's being added to the counts. And there are two resolutions, one for the subdivision ordinance and one for the zoning. This is the one for the zoning.
Okay.
I'm not going to make the read. Well, I think you've got two resolutions, one for the cooperative zoning and one for the subdivision. And I think you just reference the language in the...
Referencing the language that starts in ordinance to amend and read Act Chapter 12, 22. Articles 1 and
2. Right, that's all the summary.
Okay.
Then you need to get to the subdivision.
Okay, do I have a second? Have a motion by Ms. Eager. Do I have a second?
Yes, sir. Okay.
Have a motion by Ms. Eager to initiate a public hearing for changes to the zoning ordinance reference tonight. And I have a second by Mr. Gaines. All in favor, say aye.
Yeah, it's the,
Subdivision.
Subdivision, isn't it?
Do I have a motion about the, advertising changes for the subdivision ordinance, that is being recommended, by Mr. Payne?
Computer's on strike. Cody was to break in the strike. It's on, page 18 of your, of this item.
What page is that, overall?
I think it's 18.
I had it up, but I closed mine.
I think it's the first page after the, that last special use permit you got. Page 57, excuse me.
Page 78 in ours, I think.
78, okay.
78.
Oh, wait, that's about, that's, okay. 78 was the one we just did.
57, that's what you got.
Thank you.
Of course, the top, gotta pull it down to 57, I got it right here, if you just.
I'd like to make a motion to amend and reenact chapters 19, the articles 1, 3, 6, and 7, and 8 of the Humane County Code, by certain amendments to sections, and subsections 19-1, 3, chapter 3, North Side.
I don't think it's necessary, it's the, it's the resolution that's set out in, on page 57.
Yeah, some resolution that's set out on page 57.
I have a motion by Mr. Gaines, do I have a second?
Second.
Mr. Johnson, second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 4-0. Okay.
Just in case you're feeling put upon that you have to do all this, we specifically divided, give you the zoning subdivision, give the board everything else. Now, the contrary statement there.
Okay, our last item tonight is, our second section of public comment. Seeing no public